Welcome to this edition of Environment Matters with me, Amanda Yorworth. Environment Matters is the show that brings you news on issues of sustainability in the environment from around the district and from further afield. Coming up later in the show, the Hartson and Middlesex Wildlife Trust invite you to the Festival of Wildlife. We'll be finding out more. But first, I often urge you to take part in citizen science projects. You know, the kind of thing you or me, your average Joe Public, goes out and spots a diseased tree or a rare butterfly or counts some earthworms and then reports back on what we've found. And scientists then put together our findings and use them to further their understanding of what's going on in the natural world. And scientists at Rothamsted Research have just carried out a study looking at the effectiveness of citizen science. Nathan Brown from Rothamsted Research explained more. I was getting a bit worried. So Nathan, thank you for joining me in the studio. Now, given the number of citizen science surveys that, well, you know, I'm always asking people to help with now, I'd always assumed that contributions from members of the public regarding things like tree diseases were useful. So why did you and the other people who were taking part in this study think that they might not be?
Well, it's not a case of us not thinking they're useful. These are really important reports, and often if it's a case of first detecting something new, just having the extra eyes on the ground can be really good. But what we wanted to look at was how much more we could do with the data.
Okay.
To see if we could try and do some mathematical predictions.
Right.
To try and assess the area of the country that we thought was affected.
Right. So this is looking at different ways of using the statistical data that members of the public are providing. Is that right?
Yeah, that's great. It's, I guess, trying to get the most from the effort that people are putting in.
Right. OK. And did you look at, for example, how you could make sure that the quality of the data being given by members of the public was of a good enough standard, or ways of improving the quality of the data?
All the data we were using had been reported into Forest Research.
Yes.
And been validated by them, so they'd checked the reports.
Yeah.
They have an online reporting system, Tree Alert.
Yes,
which
yes.
Any member of the public, if they think something's up with a tree, they
yep.
can fill in a report or take some photos, and Forest Research will provide an identification where possible.
Right, OK. I have, in fact, covered this. We've talked about this on the show before, because there's things like oak processionary moth making their way towards us. So people have been encouraged to report that sort of thing. So you've been looking at the data that's being reported through that portal, were you?
Yes. Yeah.
Indeed. So you used maths to do what? How did you add to the value of the data by just using a statistical, I don't know how you call it even, you better explain it best
okay.
than me.
So in addition to the data that we were getting from the public, we designed a survey. So we had members of the Forestry Commission going out and looking in a random selection of woods.
Yes.
And from this, we were then trying to predict what the probability of AOD, which is the problem we're looking at.
Yes.
To
yes.
see
that's acute oak decline.
Yes. Sorry. To predict the probability that was in places where people hadn't looked, based
right.
on the sample that
okay,
we had.
I see. So, of course, even with members of the public, there are going to be places that they don't look.
Yes.
So you're working out how you can use the data you do have to fill in the gaps for the information that you don't have.
Yes, that's correct.
Right? Okay. So am I right in thinking that this kind of makes what members of the public contribute even more important?
Definitely. It's an extra thing we can do with the data. And, yeah, our testing of the method we were developing showed that inclusion of these extra reports really, really helped the quality of our prediction.
Right. Okay. So people out there listening who, if they haven't taken part in sort of citizen science things before, or if they already are doing, is your message actually that their reports are even more important than we thought they were?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
The more information that you have when you're trying to do these predictions, the better.
Right, okay. And would you say that actually this is a great thing? Which, I mean, I'm just thinking actually that there's not so much funding around, presumably, for scientists working on seeing where diseases like tree diseases are. So presumably we're going to be relying on members of the public even more, are we?
Well, I think regardless of the situation, it's really helps with coverage.
Yeah.
So the local knowledge that people have, the amount of area you can cover is just increased so much more.
Yeah.
That regardless of the level of survey going on, yeah, it can always be supplemented by that local knowledge.
Okay. Now, you've worked with the Forestry Commission and tree diseases here. Will this kind of methodology be used with other surveys, do you think?
The method we've developed is based on epidemiological principles, so the idea that things are spreading around the landscape.
Yeah.
So really this would work well with pests and diseases, yeah, but lots of other things move around the landscape. So there's potential that it could work in other situations if you're trying to do spatial predictions, but we would need to test that.
Right. Okay, then. So that's untested, but fingers crossed that it might work, yeah, for, I don't know, for perhaps unusual butterflies or goodness knows what like that as well.
Yeah,
excellent.
Definitely.
Nathan, thank you very much indeed for coming and explaining your work to us. Thank
you. Okay, thank you.
I was talking there to Nathan Brown of Rothamsted Research. And now that we know that our citizen science efforts are even more valuable, then perhaps you're inspired to join in. So what I'll do is I'll pop some links to a few that might interest you on the environment page of the Radio Verulam website. Now, it's nearly time for this year's Hearts and Middlesex Wildlife Trust Festival of Wildlife. So what have we got to look forward to? I spoke to Charlotte Hussey from the Wildlife Trust to find out. So Charlotte, thank you very much indeed for joining me. So what's the idea behind the Festival of Wildlife?
Hi Amanda. Well, the Festival of Wildlife celebrates the wildlife of Hertfordshire and Middlesex. It gives people the chance to really appreciate the amazing nature on their doorstep. We're holding it in association with Hearts Natural History Society, and Tarmac are kindly hosting the event at Pansanger Park.
All right, OK then. Well, that sounds great. So who's it aimed at? I mean, I had a quick look. Did you think it's the kind of thing where you're going to feel misplaced if you've not got a couple of toddlers in tow?
No, not at all. We've tried to cater to everyone who's interested in wildlife, and the weekend will really offer a variety of activities. You certainly won't feel like you've come to the wrong place if you don't have children. We have talks and walks as well as drop-in activities suitable for all ages.
That's good. Okay, don't then. So if we just start perhaps with the younger children in mind, what kind of thing have you got going on that they might enjoy?
We have our forest school, which will offer a mud kitchen, magic potion making, willow crown making and loads more to get stuck into. And round the corner, we'll also have a mini beast safari where both kids and adults will love to hunt in the grass for creepy crawlies and our experts can identify them.
Oh, that's so good to hear that things like mud kitchen are still going on. Some of my fondest childhood memories are making a piping bag out of a page of an old telephone directory and then filling it up with sloppy mud and piping mud chocolate.
Sounds like practice for cake baking in the future.
Well, that's right. I do quite enjoy a bit of cake making now, so perhaps it was. But anyway, that does sound like brilliant fun, a good bit of the kind of thing to wear your old clothes for, I suspect.
Definitely.
Okay. So, for those of us who are a little bit older, you know, perhaps we're past the mud kitchen stage, what kind of things have we got for adults then?
Well, our expert walks and talks will cater to lots of different areas of interest. So adults can check our website and find something that suits them. For example, we've got sessions around subjects like water voles, ospreys, dragonflies and more, as well as practical advice for wildlife gardening and taking great photos on a smartphone. We've also got bird ringing, and our Living Rivers expert is running a chalk stream discovery where you can find out what's living in our local rivers.
Oh, that sounds great then. Because actually, one of the really nice ways to engage with wildlife is by taking photos. And quite often it's just your smartphone you've got, isn't it? So that'd be really nice to work out how to do a bit better. And of course the ospreys, it's at Pansanger Park where that have ospreys been seen, isn't it?
Absolutely, we're really lucky they've been seen a lot in recent years, sort of end of August, beginning of September.
Yeah.
So it's fantastic to hear all about them, and then you can pop in closer to the time and hopefully see one for yourself.
Oh, that would be great, wouldn't it? Okay, and how about those difficult in-betweenies, you know, the teens that might have, they might be quite hard to persuade to come along. Is there anything you think that might appeal to them?
Well, we've got a discovery area which will give talks on mammals, and they've got specimens, so it's a little bit younger than the adult talks, but definitely older than the mud kitchens.
Yeah.
And there's also Animal Olympics, where you can find out about the different skills of animals and then test your own skills against them.
Okay.
And then if you can't persuade them to do that, then head over to the bird watching or hop on the Tarmac Quarry tractor tour, which will take you all around the park where you can see the quarrying in action.
All right. Okay. That sounds like lots of fun. Yeah, that could well appeal, couldn't it? And this isn't the first time that you've held the festival, is it? You held it previous years. Is there anything different going on this year that you've not done before?
Yeah, the discovery area is new, and we've also got a lot more local organisations involved this year. Groups like the Hearts Back Group and Hearts and Middlesex Badger Group. You'll also be able to pop into our arts and crafts tent and buy local traders' work. I'd really recommend looking out for Puddingstone Distillery's stall. We recently partnered with them to create a gin infused with the Himalayan balsam, which grows in Hertfordshire, and £2 a bottle is donated to the Trust.
So this is proper gin, which has got, so Himalayan balsam, that's a sort of like a pink flower that grows around, it chokes waterways actually, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's an invasive species, but it's completely edible. So it's something that our volunteer work parties would have pulled anyway, and now it's able to be put to good use. We've got a very, very pretty pink gin with some floral notes.
Yes.
So it's great. Help the Trust by drinking gin.
Well, who could resist a tempting offer like that, hey? Help the Trust by drinking gin. Okay, no. So I mean, one of the nicer things about the festival is that it's a great way to get outdoors, isn't it? But I just think about some of the weather we've had this week. It has been a bit soggy. Will there be anything going on inside? And if it is raining, will things still go ahead?
Yeah, if the weather's not kind to us, the festival will still go ahead. There are talks and craft stalls inside, but we won't let a bit of rain spoil our fun anyway. I would recommend sticking some wellies and a waterproof on and just joining in the fun. The Forest School Mud Kitchen will be even better, and there'll be loads to learn on walks.
Okay. Sounds good. Just thinking, as you've mentioned, there's lots of sort of walks and sessions and things. Do we have to book these things in advance, or are we okay just rocking up?
No, we really want people to book on the day. We don't want things to get booked up and then it's not fair on the people that turn up on the day. So it's first come, first served.
Right.
So if you're really interested in something, I'd recommend getting earlier in the day, but you can't book online beforehand.
Right. Okay. And do you are you sort of repeating the session so that, you know, if we miss one, then we'll have the opportunity to join in again later?
A lot of the walks are repeated. There's generally one sort of earlier in the day and one in the afternoon.
Yeah.
The talks, generally, they're one-offs. I would have a look on the website and see if there's any. All the timings are on the website, so you can definitely get a look in there and plan your day.
Okay, that's great. Very important here, you've mentioned the gin, which of course we will have to give a try to, but if we're taking all the family or, you know, just making a nice day of it, will we be able to get food and drink there?
Definitely. We've got lots of delicious food. We've got Jack's Smoke Shack and Emilio's Vintage Catering, which offers food for both meat eaters and vegetarians. And then we've got ice cream and waffles for dessert and coffee ethic for hot drinks.
Lovely. That sounds delicious. So just remind us of the dates and times again.
So it's this Saturday and Sunday, the 29th and 30th of July, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Pansanger Park near Hertford. You can find out more information at heartswildlifetrust.org.uk/festival.
Lovely. Well, Charlotte, we'll make sure that that link goes onto our website so that everybody can take a look and enjoy it. Lovely, Charlotte. I hope it goes really well. Thank you for coming and explaining it to us.
Thanks for having me.
And that was me talking to the lovely Charlotte Hussey from the Hearts and Middlesex Wildlife Trust. And just another point, a couple of points there that I forgot to mention. There are disabled toilets and there is also disabled parking, which is very close to the site. The paths might get a little bit muddy, but they are sort of quite level grass apart from that. And dogs are welcome as long as they're kept on a lead. So, yeah, there we go. Everybody's welcome to come along. And as I said, I'll make sure that the information about that goes on the environment page of the Radio Verulam website. Now, this weekend is a great weekend if you're interested in growing your own food, as there are not one, but two open food gardens open this Saturday. Now, you'll remember that the idea of this scheme is that people already growing their own food, they throw open their gardens for a couple of hours so that we can all go and see what they're up to and gather a few tips. And not just from the person whose garden it is, but perhaps from other people who are there as well. And that'll just help us to either get started on growing our own stuff or help us to do things differently or a little bit better. Now, the first one is number 4 York Road, and you can drop in there anytime between 2 o'clock and 4 o'clock, and you can look forward to flowers and shrubs as well as fruit and vegetables, and everything is grown organically. Now, there's limited on-street parking. It's not voucher parking, but there's not very much of it, but there is space to put your bikes at the side of the house if you decide to cycle there. And there's wheelchair access to the patio and to the lawn area. Although, again, the lawn, you know, if it's a bit muddy, you might want to think about that. Now, the second open food garden, that's also open this Saturday, and that's at 27 Glenferry Road. And that one's going to be open from 3 o'clock until 5 o'clock. Now, as well as attractive shrubs and climbers, there's loads of wonderful fruit. They've got blueberries, blackberries, raspberries, all of that. Nectarines, oh yes. And they've got a fan-trained plum tree as well. So some fabulous fruit going on there. But not only is there fruit and veg, but also the garden is home to 3 chickens. So that will be lovely. Do go and say hi to the chickens as well. And also they're going to have a few plants that they've grown, which will be on sale. And the proceeds from that will be going towards Transition St Albans, which is the group that organises the Open Food Gardens. Now, for both of the gardens, the entrance is free, but there's a suggested donation of £2 for all over 16s. Children's are free. And as I say, for that, all the funds go to Transition St Albans. Now, if you do like your gardens, you might like to know that the National Gardens Scheme have got gardens open this week. There's a particularly nice one open at 35 Digswell Road in Welwyn Garden City. That's open... That's open on Sunday from 2 until 5:30. It's a town garden of around a third of an acre, naturalistic planting inspired, we are told, by the Dutch garden designer Pierre Odolf. It's got perennial borders, a meadow, packed with herbaceous plants and grasses, contemporary planting that gives way to an exotic area, a succulent bed, crikey, all sorts of stuff going on here, isn't there? A lush jungle of a garden, including bamboos, bananas, palms and tree ferns. And Daisy Roots Nursery will be selling plants. So fantastic. And of course, because it's from the National Garden Scheme, all the money raised from that will be going to a great cause. Right. Information about that, I'll put that on the environment page of the Radio Verulam website, along with everything else. And you can also listen there to the podcast. Remember, tweet us at RV_environment. Email us at environmentonrv@gmail.com. Next week, we're going to have a look at some wild ideas for the summer holidays and keeping kids occupied. So until the same time next week, thank you for listening.